Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1934. You have with you here today FDH Lounge Managing Partner Rick Morris, along with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Fran Stuckberry, the great columnist from Our Sports Central. And we've had Fran on the show many times over the years to talk all levels of football. Of course, Fran covers so many different sports for Our Sports Central, all the different sports under the sun, it would seem, from time to time. He is the resident UFL columnist. So we are speaking today of the 2026 UFL season and the 2026 United Bowl, which Fran was there in person to cover in D.C. So a lot to get to, Fran, as far as this past season of spring football and the championship game that you were covering in person. How are you today, my friend?
Doing good. I mean, in this sweltering hot June down south in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yeah.
Right there in the triangle. Yeah, if there's any place that's hotter than the North Coast, it probably would be there. We're sweltering up here. I know you're sweltering down there. And not too long ago, you were at the championship game, which you had been covering for Our Sports Central. But you've got a weekly column on Our Sports Central where you've been covering the league throughout the season. And, of course, you were covering the season in the lead up to it as well. And at year two of the UFL, there, of course, were some changes. You had the relocation of some franchises here. As I was looking at the map, I mean, it's not quite an east of the Mississippi League, but, I mean, it's closer to that than one would have thought that it would have been. And that's probably just temporary as they start to get into expansion over a period of time. But, again, talk about from year one to year two what a lot of the changes were that you saw in the league this year.
Well, the transition was when Mike Rapoli became an owner of UFL, changes got made. They moved some franchises around. No more Memphis Showboats. No more San Antonio Brahmas. No more Michigan Panthers. They moved from big stadiums to soccer stadiums. So the Houston Gamblers went from ECU Stadium to where the Houston Dash play, and as well as Houston Dynamo. The Dallas team went from Arlington to where the Dallas SC Dallas plays. You know, I mean, three new teams, Orlando, Louisville, and Columbus, infused some blood in the league.
And again, as you said, a lot of these teams playing in soccer stadiums. Of course, the Columbus franchise local hero Ted Ginn Jr. Being the head coach of that franchise, and they were playing in the Columbus Crew Stadium. And it was a very, very interesting year for the league. And it seems like the ratings were more or less kind of stable year over year. And that, from my notes here that I've got, the viewership rose 1%, but is still below the 2024 season of 850,000. So you're looking at a circumstance where, the league has been – It seems like more or less at about the same level the last couple of seasons here. I don't follow it nearly as closely as you do, but I mean, it would seem to me that that's kind of where it's at right now, is more or less where it's been at the last couple of years.
Well, the thing is, this season, the three new markets infused a little fresh blood in the league and some excitement. And you got some local guys coaching the teams, as we saw with Tekken Jr. with Columbus, Chris Redman with Louisville. Anthony Beck went from St. Louis to Orlando. Ricky Prohl is a St. Louis coach. He played with Kurt Warner on that St. Louis Rams football team. So you had a lot of different Rick Neuheisel, the gunslinger in Dallas. Kevin Sumlin got the Houston Gamblers job. So, They decided to make changes with the coaches, and the coaches are now also general managers, so they have full-time employment.
Yes, that was one of the changes that was made, was moving the coaches from being on a seasonal basis to a year-round basis, which, I mean, if you want to be taken seriously as a league, I mean, that would seem like a bare minimum that you want to do, is to be able to have them engaged on a year-long basis. And there had been some talk, I know, coming into the season of potentially expanding to 10 teams. From what I've seen, I believe 2028 is probably now when that might be earmarked to happen. And that further expansion as you get into the 2030s. And it will be interesting to see what the marketplace will bear in the years to come, not merely in terms of markets that want to support the league, but in terms of the talent base that is available and what that looks like. If there are enough players in this new unified system that we've had for a couple of years, of course, the predecessor leagues being the USFL and the XFL, but in this system here, if it can sustain double-digit number of teams like they're planning in the 2030s, I believe.
Well, Oklahoma City will be coming in the league in 2028. That's a soccer-specific stadium that's being built for the USL team out in Oklahoma City. So, and the other team, we shall see where they go. I think they want more of a presence either in the East or in the West. They can't just stay in the South and in the areas where they have teams.
I would agree with that. And what were your thoughts on abandoning the format that had been used previously as far as two divisions of four to basically you more or less now have a first division with the four top teams making the playoffs, and then you've got the bottom four teams, but they were all in the same quote-unquote division / league / conference / whatever. So the notion of that where it's not broken up into the two divisions, what did you think about that?
Well, I think it kind of made the league more joined together because it seemed like the XFL fan had their fan base and the USFL fans had their fan base. And it was kind of like, you know, it seemed like it brought them more together. The USFL fans are not as happy because some of they lost more markets than the XFL teams did. But the thing is, you can't afford to play in Michigan anywhere. You can't waste lots of money playing with the Lions plate. I mean, San Antonio was too big of a stadium. Download Dome was way too big of a stadium. And Memphis was just – nobody was showing up there. So, I mean, and Houston got a chance because they moved to the soccer-specific stadium. And the thing is, they have to do more marketing at home. They have to get more engagement. Attendance was down. That's the one negative that's happened in this league. So they have to be able to ramp it up a little bit more to get more people to come to the games.
Yes, that is going to be something that they're going to need to focus on in the time ahead. And as far as quality of play on the field, what did you think about the league this year relative to 2025 and 2024?
Well, the quality of play was pretty good this year. Unfortunately, with the DC Defenders losing Jordan Tamu to a torn ACL, that kind of hurt them. And obviously, that's part of the reason why they lost the United Bowl Championship. The level of play was good. Hopefully the quarterback play gets a little bit better in the following season. So, the running backs were decent. The wide receivers, the 1 foot in bounds made games more exciting. The 4-point field goal, that was an exciting play. Tanner Brown made several kicks. Now he's going to be kicking for the New Orleans Saints. That's perfect for him to be indoors with his leg strength.
Yes. And that's the one thing is that a lot of times kickers are an obvious place where that position can be a launching pool to, at minimum, NFL tryouts / practice squads, and sometimes more than that. But as you look at the season, as you noted, that DC was not necessarily 100% healthy coming down the stretch here, but they were in position to, notwithstanding being the 4 seed, they were designated as the host for the United Bowl and ended up losing to the higher seed Louisville in that game. The previous week, it had been DC over Orlando 28-22 and Louisville over St. Louis by a score of 29-20. And again, 27-20 in the United Bowl. So talk about your experience of being there and covering the championship game and everything that surrounded the event.
Well, I enjoyed getting the media day because I was able to talk to some of the players and the coaches. Chris Redman is part of that Ravens Super Bowl where Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. How is that possible? But the squad of the four coaches, Jamie Sharper, Tony Banks. Tony Banks is a coach in this league. That's amazing.
Yeah. And Chris Redman's a guy that I actually thought when he came into the league, I actually thought that he would have the potential to have a pretty good pro career. It ended up, again, primarily a backup and not for as long in the league as I thought he would last. But I get some championship glory as a coach here in the end in this game. And as far as the atmosphere of the game on game day, what was that like as you were covering it?
Oh, the place was packed. I mean, the game was a sold out game. They had that beer, those golden cups, the golden beer snakes. Tom Lugaville, the ABC sideline reporter, contributed to that beer snake. It was fun. I mean, the atmosphere was electric. They had 50 cent halftime, so that was that brought an interesting crowd of energy for people. Some people came just to see him perform.
Sure. Yeah, I think that sold a few tickets as they were going along. And again, did it really kind of take the wind out of the stadium here with the outcome at the end with DC coming up short?
Oh yeah, it definitely did. I mean it would have been a lot nicer for the home team to win the championship. But Louisville played good all season long. They played good defense, special teams. They made the plays when they had to. The defense stepped up with a defensive touchdown, as well as forcing a fumble on a long run by the defender's running back, which created a touchback.
Is there a greater premium when you're talking about the skill level of a league like this versus the NFL or perhaps even major college football of being situationally strong like that, being the teams that are able to be opportunistic and make plays at the right times? Like in the NFL, that a lot of times gets written off as just essentially luck. I know the turnovers are considered by a lot of critics to just be a function of luck, because sometimes it can be just a matter of which way the ball bounces as far as which team recovers a fumble. But I almost wonder if opportunistic play isn't that much more important in a league where the skill level of teams 1 through 8 is much tighter than it is in the NFL.
Oh, definitely. Because defense in this league can definitely win championships, making plays, forcing turnovers, putting pressures on the quarterbacks, forcing teams to pass the ball instead of running it. It varies from team to team. I mean, Louisville Louisville didn't have that dominant of a passing game, but they made big plays when they had to. It was their running backs, Ian Wheeler, and the running back who played with the Jaguars.
Well, and you talked about the capacity of defense to win. Oh, okay. The capacity of defense to win championships in this league. And just eyeballing the regular season scores, it does appear that this is a league that leans strongly towards the defense. You're not seeing a lot of games where teams are up in the 40s or even especially the 50s or anything like that beyond that. And there are a fair number of games where at least one team is in the single digits. So as the league continues to progress here, what do you think accounts for that more? Is it that they're more easily able to recruit talent on the defensive side of the ball, or that it's just a large gap in being able to get a sufficient number of skilled players on the offensive side of the ball, or maybe both?
Well, I think part of it was when they basically started like a brand new league with a brand new draft. They decided just to start from scratch, or teams were able to keep some players and the rest of the players got drafted. So it took like a continuity issue where to get players to get acclimated to perform on both sides of the ball. Next year, the level of play will be much better because there's going to be no team, turnover besides the teams that lose players to the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an odd thing that they did there. I mean, it's almost like, Vince Russo hitting the reset button repeatedly back in like 2000. Like, it makes you kind of wonder, why they decided to do that. I think, what was it? Was it 12 players that each team was allowed to freeze? Was that what happened? Okay. Yeah.
I think was obviously a team that got affected a lot by it was Birmingham Stallions, who missed out on the playoffs the last week of the season. But I mean, they wanted to even out the level of talent, level of play. And in my inside UFL column, I did a best bet lock of the week. I won 8-1. I don't bet on the games. I just do it for fun, just for kicks, for people who want to bet on the games. One guy that would have wanted to bet on the games, if I knew my column was out there, was Brendan Sorsby.
Yes, he could have made some money off of you. He was making and losing money off of various other sources, as we know, the last couple of years betting college football and the games that he was in, no less. And that's part of the reason he won't be in the UFL, nor the NFL, nor apparently the CFL or anything else like that over the course of the next year. But in this league, yeah, I mean,
Well, the thing is, Michael Pauling on Twitter invited him to join playing the league. He's not going to. He's going to, stay out of the press for a year, work out and get ready for an NFL team to draft him, or he'll be undrafted free agent next year.
That's right. And when you talked about the desire to level out the talent among the different teams here, one would think, and I don't follow this closely enough to know for sure, but one would think that there might very well be some hard feelings in the fan base of the Birmingham Stallions, because again, they go 4-6, they miss the playoffs, and they had been so strong with multiple championships in previous seasons here. So they were the team most clearly that was affected negatively by the decision to go that way.
Well, A.J. McCarron took over. Skip Holtz left the team. So A.J. McCarron, the Alabama quarterback, and he had played for several NFL teams. He seemed a little outcoached in some of the games. His lack of experience kind of hurt him. Some coaches did good. Some coaches struggled. You in Columbus, you had Tanker Jr., who had a DUI, but he apologized and he kept his job. Chris Redmond put together a tremendous staff. I give him all the credit in the world for what he did with Louisville, getting the right coaches, the right system, the right players. He did a phenomenal job, having guys that already had plenty of coach experience to help him, give him the support he needed.
Well, and it's always going to be a mixed bag when you're talking about first-time coaches, but when you look at, again, like you said, A.J. McCarron and the fact that it seemed to be somewhat of a learning curve for him, it's always interesting because there's a tendency to sort of paint with a broad brush in these situations here. Ted Ginn Jr., yes, had not done it himself, but, and this is one of the things where people who really follow the recruiting world know and understand this, that his father, Ted Ginn Sr., is a legendary coach in Ohio circles, and that he led Glenville to multiple state titles as a head coach up here from the greater Cleveland area. Well, the Cleveland itself, actually, the east side of Cleveland. And so while Ted Ginn Jr. May not have done the coaching and previously, having a father who's probably one of the most legendary high school football coaches in the country and is somebody who could give him some tips on how to handle stuff like this probably didn't hurt very much, I would think, Fran.
Yeah, definitely. His problem was he kept the starting quarterback too long this season. He had too much loyalty to the starting quarterback, Jalen McClendon. He should have pivoted from that sooner.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of young coaches end up having issues with. So as the league heads out of year three and into year four in 2027, what are some of your takeaways, Fran, as far as what you would expect for the league moving forward?
Maybe to expand the roster, so when teams get injured, maybe one or two players when teams get injured, they have players that already have been in the system. That would help a little bit, expand the roster, one or two players. Mm-hmm. Do that. Maybe bring in some different quarterbacks. Diego Pavia, if he doesn't make the Ravens squad or NFL squad, maybe he can come into the UFL. I think he'd be a fun name that people would follow. Vanderbilt quarterback.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, he's not going to make an NFL roster. So yeah, he might be available. And that would be something where, again, even at that level, I think you might have to run a gimmick offense to get the most out of them. But, yeah, no, I could see a team possibly being interested in doing that, and the league definitely being interested in doing that. The league is not going to turn up its nose at any kind of personalities that can draw some eyeballs to the product, and he most certainly would. So, yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see how that materializes. And in the meantime, as is always the case this time of year, after the season, you end up seeing a number of these guys, as you had noted, getting invited to training camps for the NFL. So there will be, it will continue to be the proliferation of some talent to the NFL as it has been really throughout the course of this spring league and the two predecessor spring leagues.
Well, the thing is right now, 23 players have signed with NFL teams. That'll obviously be more added as the training camps go on and injuries happen or different needs happen. But it definitely gives people a chance, a look, an opportunity. And if they make the practice squad, they're making good money. Plus, if they stay long enough in that practice squad, they can get a pension. That's a nice incentive to, you know, just to get to make a practice squad in the NFL.
Absolutely. So that shows you the kind of stepping stone vis-a-vis opportunities of what's at stake here for these players. And it's indicative of, you know, as you watch the games, again, everybody's playing very, very hard because they want to get noticed. They want to get discovered to be able to play on Sundays in the fall. And indeed, there will be some of the players that go on to do that. So any other thoughts from the 2026 UFL season of yours that we didn't get to, Fran?
Well, I had a fun experience at Audi Field. That's the perfect place. That's home of the DC United and the Washington Spirit of the NWSL. It's a fun stadium. It's a nice, intimate stadium, the Beer State fan base. Hopefully their attendance gets a little bit better next season. St. Louis, they led the league in attendance, but Louisville is going to be a fun market in this UFL. I'm hoping that's where the chance is going to be next year. Louisville, the fan base seems to really have embraced that the Kings squad. So I feel things are going to improve in next season from attendance, maybe ratings going higher a little bit to the level of play getting better with the continuity.
Yeah, the continuity will definitely help, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out. But again, I know that you'll be covering it for our Sports Central as always. And again, and you've noted on the show previously, trips to the Atlanta area to cover multiple sporting events at a time, as well as Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, of course, you've got your usual set of duties with the website here. But anything else that sticks out at you right now that you might have coming up as far as notable assignments?
Well, last week I went to the Durham Bulls ballpark to cover the Athletes Unlimited Softball League Carolina Blaze game. That was so much fun. I decided to buy a ticket, Rick, so I can sit in the stands, take photos, and mm-hmm. I used ESPN for an interview for my post, my story, as well as broadcast information. Plus, I found the press conference on YouTube for my story, so that was fun. Mm-hmm. Football in person in general is fun to watch. I scored 4 home runs in that game, 3 by the Blaze. That was kind of fun. The Durham Bulls mascot was there. I got a picture taken with him. That was kind of fun. And now, after with the World Cup break almost ending, this Saturday I covered my first of 4 National Women's Soccer League North Carolina Courage games this month of July. So I'm going to have a busy month of covering Courage games for Sports Central.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And again, there's always a ton of sports going on at different levels where you're at down in the Triangle area there. Yeah, I know there's always so many different things going on. And when you get to the fall, more college football games within a couple of hour drive than most people have across this country. So, yeah, I know you'll be covering it all as we move forward here. And so additionally, speaking of college football, we'll be having you back on probably as per always right around early to mid-August. That's when we generally do this. Have you on to look at the 2026 college football season. So there will be a lot to get to when we go to do that. So folks can look forward to that with your next appearance here on the show. But great to have you on to talk about the 2026 UFL season, Fran, as well as the 2026 United Bowl.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate being on.
Thanks so much, Fran. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1934.